What's happening, you dipshits? It's me, William, the Biscuit. How are we doing? I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. Today, I have a special guest, Scott Hyatt from Akula Suplex, bridesmaid, former Lacusta. We're going to come in, talk a little bit about the new Akula album and a little bit of hockey. Of course, this episode is brought to you by Lucid Float Spas out of Mount Vernon, Ohio, Ohio's premier sensory deprivation tank center, where you can go and stop feeling like the fuck bag that you are. We're also partnered up with ParkersPlatoon.org, started by Scott the Sheriff Parker and his wife Francesca. They are a nonprofit organization set out to help veterans' lives as they come back from war. Scott, you know, we'll have dinner with these guys, take them snowmobiling, Francesca as well, just to kind of, you know, just to be there and help out and talk to them and, you know, let somebody know that cares and let them know that, you know, a Stanley Cup champion cares. And it means a lot to these guys, and they, of course, mean a lot to us as well. Right now they have challenge coins from I think it was like a poker run that they did back in the day. And then they also have teamed up with Receptra CBD oil company, the highest quality CBD oil, and the topical cream, which Parks has said himself he wishes he had when he was playing. Just rubbing it on his hands helps with arthritis, pain, inflammation. You know, there's a lot of people that are addicted to painkillers and all sorts of pills, and you know, people really need to get up on the CBD oil before the FDA makes it illegal for whatever reason. I mean, you know why, but yeah. Enjoy, guys. Scott Hyatt.
Now Probert got the right hand. He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate, and down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurts.
It's old time hockey.
Enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the Biscuit. It's the Biscuit.
Damn it! The school regulation size of what?
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day of fighting's ever been. As a country will stop working on some fucking can.
Hi everybody. It's the Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, wanna go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man.
Here he is in all his splendor, Scott Hyatt of Bridesmaid, Akula, and 1,600 other bands. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, dude. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I'm really excited to have you here, specifically for the new Akula album coming out. And then you're just one of the few people that I know that I'm close with that are a hockey fan, and I've always been a hockey fan since I've known you. So that it puts you in a rare group and a very close to my heart group.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of hockey becoming really hip within the last couple of years. But
oh,
I mean, I've been a diehard since I was born. So,
well, it was weird. I mean, what I've known you since Lacusta was playing probably over 10 years now.
That stuff started like 10 years ago. Yeah,
exactly. So, and I wouldn't really say like to anybody like, hey, like, oh, you want to talk hockey? Cause everyone would just be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then like,
like sports, like, what are you talking about sports here?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about French underground death metal with only the solo, like, or your t-shirt collection or something. I'm like, oh my God, dude, I'm gonna fucking smash my face into a wall.
Exactly.
But when it comes up, you're like, oh, yeah. But at least hockey seems to be one of the, at least for like heavier bands, the more appreciated sports for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's always just kind of this element of awe with people that aren't super familiar with it, especially if you go and see it live. Like, I know a lot of people that haven't been super into hockey, you know, just within the last couple of years that have ended up going to like a Jackets game. And then just being like, holy shit, this is a totally different experience when I'm there.
Yeah, it's the only way to truly appreciate the sport and fall in love with it is to go see it live. If you go see it live and you don't like hockey after that, then it's not for you. But to but to try to watch it.
You're also boring shit.
Yeah, you're also, I fucking hate you and get out of my life. But to watch it on TV, it's hard, especially if you don't know what's happening. But there's the appreciation you walk out of a rink after seeing guys, you're like, oh shit, they're hauling pure ass.
Oh yeah.
Oh, and that guy just got crushed into a wall of glass and kept playing. And then like
what I just remembered, as far as like watching it and it being difficult to watch. Did you ever watch when Fox used to own the coverage of NHL and they would have the puck highlights?
Dude, people in Belleville loved the puck trail, dude. It speaks so perfectly for Belleville, because I remember even like talking to like 45-year-old ladies, like, oh, I actually like hockey now because they have that fucking highlighted puck. And I'm like, oh, it doesn't want to make you have a seizure because I cannot watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's talk. I heard Bettman say today, actually, that they're like trying to figure out a way to have a puck tracker.
God damn it.
And I'm why?
Just learn the fucking game. It's not that fucking harsh.
No, it's not that crazy. And half the time, if you're watching on TV, like, it's on, it's just the hockey game's on. You don't really, because you can't see the whole fucking rink anyhow.
Right.
So you're just kind of trying to catch whatever you can, and, you know, maybe in the rest of your head try to envision, like, oh, I've been to a game, so this is happening. But yeah, you definitely, if you have a rink close to you, I cannot recommend enough. And I'm sure if you're listening to The Biscuit at this point, you're probably a full-blown alcoholic and probably going to a lot of hockey games. Hey, I
listen to The Biscuit and I'm still straight edge, so I don't even know like what that makes me or what that says about me.
You're probably the closest to drinking of any straight edge person in the world, though. Probably. Hey, I saw you were up towards my way there. Was it last weekend?
Yeah, my wife and I we did a little belated Valentine's Day celebration. We went to you're probably familiar with these, at least just like from being around in the area. There are these really nicely done tree houses. Kind of in that, in like the Belleville-ish area that like, I mean, they have like lofted beds, they have a small kitchen, they have a bathroom. A lot of them have like showers and stuff like that. It's pretty wild.
Now, those are out by Landall's Castle, right? Like out that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
We also stayed at Landall's Castle the weekend that we got engaged.
How fucking righteous is that place?
Dude, it's awesome. It's awesome. Honestly, if anybody's listening to this and they're anywhere near, like, sort of northeast Ohio, maybe, like, not north-north, but, like, just generally north and east Ohio, not only is Landall's Castle badass, but the treehouse, the Mohican treehouses are awesome.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, if you're staying there, you're also surrounded by Mohican State Park, which is just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. We actually, on the weekend that we got engaged, we went hiking around there, and it was, oh my God, we were so dumb, dude. We went hiking, and we didn't think that there was anybody out there just because...
were you guys banging out on the fucking trails?
No, we were banging out on the trails. No. But we figured, oh, well, it was like a Sunday or a Monday or something like that. So we were like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of cold. It's like a Sunday or Monday. I'm sure, you know, there aren't too many people left out here at this time of the season or something like that. And we kept seeing like markings on the trees that were all red. And I'm like, I'm asking my wife, I'm like, hey, what is that? Like, are we stumbling into something that we aren't supposed to be stumbling into? She's like, no, they're just remarking the emergency exits on the trail. So I'm like, okay, this is probably okay. Come to find out, like, we come back down and we go to like this pizza place, like Trails End Pizza or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And there's somebody there that she knows, and she goes just from like the trail running that she does. And so we go up to this person, and you know, we're kind of shooting the shit. You know, we're like, well, you know, we're just out kind of for a weekend at Landall's Castle and Treehouse, and we just decided to do some hiking in the state park and forest. And he goes, huh, you guys went hiking today, huh? And we're like, yeah, why? He goes, really? on the first day of open season without any orange on you, you went hiking.
Oh, we like, bro. Oh, God. Do you know how many idiots are here, too?
Oh, I'm sure not only were we fucking stupid, but we also probably pissed off every hunter in that area.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if we, like, entered anybody's scopes or anything, and then they got fucking pissed off, but we were also just, like, talking and making a bunch of noise, and I'm sure we scared everything off, so.
Well, hopefully you just scared one into somebody, because, I mean, those woods are hunted, like, very heavily. People take high advantage of it, which is good because, I mean, it's public land, you know, why not? But oh my God, dude, that's scary as fuck.
Get out of control if they don't, so.
That's scary. I'm surprised there wasn't like a guy out there like, hey, what the fuck are you doing?
We probably didn't go deep enough into the forest because the state park, you're not allowed to hunt in, but the state forest, you definitely are.
Right.
So we probably didn't venture far enough out into the forest to really get in anybody's way. But yeah, it was fucking stupid, man.
And then being vegan too, like the deer would just like come right up to you. So like it would be.
Yeah, they're like my brothers, basically.
You're closer to them than me, I think. Hey, I wanted to say thanks for looking out on that Pro Beach Hockey last time I had you on. What is almost like 30 episodes from this now, but I actually enjoyed it, man.
Did you found some?
Yeah, there's a couple games you can actually get on YouTube, and it's pretty fucking wild.
With the big ramp behind the goal?
That's the best. Like, the best part is the fucking ramps and like the just the 90s, like early 90s get up of the dudes too, like the super thick buckets and fuck, like it made me want to get out there. Like, I think I could have played in it, dude.
What'd you say?
I think like I was like, it made me want to get out there and play. I was like, dude, I think I could have played in that league, man.
Like
I really just wanted to get some fruit boots on, dude, and start just fucking going down the bike trail and getting it, man.
You probably could.
Hey, I know last time we spoke as well, you had mentioned that, you know, John Scott was one of your favorite players. Have you heard? I swear to God, dude, I wish I could punch you in the face right now.
He still is, man. Fuck it.
Dude, he's got a new podcast coming out. Have you heard?
No, I haven't. Does he really?
Yes. It should be dropping any time now. But the only thing I've seen of it is he's like sitting down with Luke Wachowski of the Detroit Red Wings at like a brewery in Michigan that's like the size of my – like the studio where I record in here. It's like super small, super intimate, and they're just talking like, you know, being enforcers, being from Michigan, and it looks so interesting. And I mean, I haven't read his book, but I've you know, seen interviews and shit with him. He's, you know, he's got a funny a very funny side to him. So I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to listen to that. I mean, I haven't read the book yet just yet either, but you know, I mean, reading his article in Players Tribune, I mean, like he's like a super smart guy. I mean, he's got a degree from like Michigan Tech. Like,
right.
He was going to go and be an engineer, like for GE or something like that. And he just happened to get like the chance of a lifetime to, you know, go and play in like the upper leagues and stuff like that. So, but he's also like really earnestly self-aware.
Yeah. You
know? Like,
yeah.
He talks about like going over the boards and being like, holy fuck, like I am playing with people that I watch, that I watched, you know, like growing up, like I have no business being here. This is insane. You know?
Yeah,
so he's very, very self-aware. And that's one of the things that I like the most about him. But yeah, if he's got a new podcast coming out, I'm all about it.
I think tentatively it was called Drop the Gloves with John Scott. But like, as I've been waiting to see it, there's already a podcast called Drop the Gloves. And it's like three nerds talking about like comedy fights, so hopefully he just like I'm hoping that's why he's waiting to put it out, because he's buying those guys out or something like that.
Yeah, hopefully.
But yeah, his story is crazy. It's like, you know his wife really pushed the issue, like, hey, you should, I mean, you have an opportunity to go play like out of Michigan Tech. Like you said, he was gonna go fucking work for GE. like, I'm not even allowed to like clean the floors at Michigan Tech, and this guy's coming out of there fucking ready to play hockey. And he did well for himself, man. I mean, he's a fucking monster. He's like 6'8 or some crazy shit like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it was interesting. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I've only watched it once today, but I don't think he actually makes much of an appearance in Ice Guardians, does he?
No, he does not.
Yeah, and I thought it was weird because he's like the quintessential, like, well, I mean, not the quintessential. What's his name is? Our new director of player safety.
Oh, George Parros.
Yeah, Parros is like the quintessential spokesperson for the enforcer role. Truly, but I mean, truly. John Scott's still one of like the most articulate enforcers that has been around for a while. And I mean, I liked all the stuff about Kevin Westgarth. Don't get me wrong, I liked Westgarth's game when he was in the NHL. But I was kind of bummed that John Scott wasn't a part of Ice Guardians.
You know, that's a good a good point to bring up, and I'm not sure why he isn't. You know, Scorgie's going to come on here soon, the producer of Ice Guardians. Because he has a new film coming out about Grant Fuhrer from Edmonton.
So, oh, seriously?
Oh, yeah, dude. It's called Making Coco. It should be out. I spoke with him probably about a month ago, and he said he's hoping everything's shot now, so he's hoping for early spring. But it should be quite amazing.
I can't wait to watch that. I mean, I was just getting into hockey when Fuhr retired, but that's super interesting. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, and I mean, I know of him and, you know, obviously him in Edmonton, but, like, his story and everything like that, I'm really excited to learn more about him. And the way that Scorgie and Harvey make documentaries, I know it's going to be really good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Ice Guardians was fantastic. So.
Oh, God, dude. We're hoping to actually put a screening of – I'm trying to find an independent theater in the Belleville area to do a screener of Ice Guardians and
seriously?
Yeah, have it like donations and just give it to Parker's Platoon to help out the veterans. So I'm trying to work that out. I'll let you know when I get the date and everything, and hopefully you and the wife can make it up for that.
Dude, I'll clear everything on my calendar for it.
But that it is. I mean, when you think about guys like that, John Scott would have been perfect for that film. Maybe he banged one of Scorgie's girlfriends back in the day or something like that. you know, never know. I mean, he was definitely playing a lot too in the NHL when that was being filmed. So maybe that kind of rendered him being a part of it.
But I know that they show like that big. The big fight between Scott and Westgarth, where I think Westgarth's playing for LA at the time, and he just gets his face just gets super bloody during that fight. And I remember that they played footage of that specific fight. In the documentary.
I think like John Scott broke his fucking face.
Westgarth
kind of gives his glam hair flip back, and you know his face is covered in blood. Like, ah. It's so crazy that like that happens in the sport, and I love it so much, and I just appreciate those guys so much. It's crazy to me, like, because I've been punched in the face and I fucking did not enjoy it, and these guys are just willing to do it for some teammates. Like, it's just crazy.
Right. Well, that was the other thing that I liked about Ice Guardians, because it gave context to that role that a lot of like the new fans, because you know, I mean, like, I think overall National Hockey League attendance is increasing or has been over the last couple of years. And so I think you have a lot of people that don't have knowledge of the enforcer role or what that entails. You know, it's essentially there so that, like, people like Brad Marchand don't go around, you know, ending people's careers by going beyond knee. You know?
Exactly. Well, I think attendance at games is up, but the lack of the guys now, TV struggles when the enforcers are missing, because that was a part of you know, you'd catch a boxing match in the middle of a hockey game.
Yeah, exactly.
But that the live part, people are actually venturing out, and you've seen it, I mean, as well as I have, even in the state of Ohio, how much hockey has grown here. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't around, maybe because of – you know, the Browns being good at football in the 50s, and then, like, the Buckeyes being so good that, like, it just – that's what you were supposed to do, was go play football. So it never, like, became a big sport until the Blue Jackets got a franchise and really have – it's spread like wildfire from there.
Yeah, and I mean, we had to survive, you know, years of being managed by Doug McLean, so he also, you know, fucking set us back God knows how long before people really started to care about hockey in Columbus, so.
Well, and there's this, I have an issue too, and it's, I don't know if it's specifically a Columbus thing, but like, a lot of the Blue Jackets fans in particular seem to they just seem to be Columbus fans, like fans of the city, and I don't think they understand the game or care to understand it. They just are going off of whatever fucking John Dangle Glenn says on Twitter, and you know, like that's all it is. And I'm just like, oh my God, guys, like, you just calm it down. Like, everybody's jumping ship now. I'm like, we're in the second wild card. Like, calm down. Have you watched this team before? I've gone through a decade of this team barely winning 30 games a fucking year. Like, let's calm it down. Everything is okay.
Right. I mean, you know, back in like the Jeff Carter era, I would have prayed for a team like this. I would have prayed for results like this.
Yeah.
With them being not only in the second wild card spot, but also being competitive night in, night out. You know, I was having to sit there while we were getting blown out, you know, and Rick Nash is getting booed, you know, game in, game out. Sometimes, reasonably and rightfully so, but...
Well, and half the time the arena was not filled by Blue Jackets fans. I mean, that's a new thing, really, of the last couple of seasons. And usually it was filled with visitors and then our guys getting booed at their fucking home ice.
Right. I think that some of the stuff with like Columbus fans is that people are just really new to it. Just like, you know, you saw with like, you know, Nashville's last big run last year.
Yeah.
You know, like half of fucking, what is it, Bridgestone Arena?
Yeah.
That was like their first season watching fucking hockey.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying not to like be down on those people because I want to welcome everyone,
exactly,
you know, to
exactly
the sport and whatnot. But I just think like the smaller markets are always going to go through that. And Columbus specifically, just because before Columbus, you know, received a franchise, you know, we're the intersection of Pittsburgh, of like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh to Chicago and Detroit,
yep,
down to, you know, wherever. I guess you could kind of lump in St. Louis in there a little bit, but like, prior to Columbus receiving their franchise, most of the hockey fans in Columbus like already had their team. You
exactly
know what I mean?
That's a thing too, because I remember like in my school, dude, it was you were either a fucking Blackhawks fan, like you said, Blackhawks fan, Red Wings fan, or if you were a complete fucking loser douchebag, you were a Penguins fan. And like that was it, and it was hard. I think for you know there. There's this huge narrative in podcasting right now that like this tribalism, like humans are so tribal that like makes sense when you think about like a dude in fifth or sixth grade that has no alliance or allegiance to anything Chicago Blackhawks, but just will not be a Blue Jackets fan because he's already a part of that Blackhawks culture.
Right.
As much as I want to hate and say it's not true, it is kind of a real thing. I'm a Blue Jackets fan, diehard, ever since they became a team. I was a Maple Leaf fan before that just because of Doug Gilmore on Wayne Gretzky's hockey on 64. Just because I could win. But after starting the show and everything, like I've had to calm down and be like, okay, not every other team fucking sucks. You know, there are good players, and it's been a trip for me actually to get rid of that tribalism and be like, well, you know, I love the Blue Jackets. All the Biscuit Babies know that. Were you on that? Were you on that tour when the Biscuit Baby dude was there?
I don't think so.
Oh God, we were in where's that place where that dude murdered them people in that house?
Oh fuck!
it's like a movie, Amityville. Amityville. And was I – no. Someone must have been filling in for bass for Lacusta. But
it was probably either Dan or Spencer. I think I know this.
Oh, okay. I think it was Spencer's tour. And then
I remember this now. Yeah, yeah.
But the dude was calling everybody mother babies, so now I call he's like, "Hey, all you mother babies, mother babies." And it was like us, like Artillery Breath, Lacusa, and then like their girlfriends, and that was it. And I'm like, are we the mother babies? Like, is he talking to us? Like, it was like a matinee show in Amityville on Tuesday, and we got put on it somehow. Like, we weren't even supposed to be there. Needless to say, I think we made $33 that night.
Hey, I mean, $33 is like close to a tank of gas. That's not too bad.
It got us down the street, and it got me a lifelong story of this dude saying mother babies.
Honestly, like, you reach a point as an independent musician where you're just doing this shit for the stories for the most part, you know?
Oh, yeah. The camaraderie and like –
it's just the memories.
Yeah. I can't imagine not playing music with my friends. So it's just like – and then people always – the first question anybody asks you when you're in a band, well, how much money do you make? I make a shit ton, dude. That's that's why I'm here talking to you right now. That's what I wanted to do is fucking make steel with your fucking ass all day today when I'm – and I wanted to ask you this too, as a bass player, do you find yourself drawn more, like, since John Scott's one of your favorite guys, towards that? Because a bass player is the enforcer of bands.
Yeah, I'll say so.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's the pretender, and then like there's real bass players too, like you, that like appreciate the equipment, appreciate like the tone and the sound and like how it actually carries. And then there's dudes that, you know, will drop the gloves when they have to, you know, and plug in the bass and then turn it down and just fake their way through their fucking bass career.
Sure, sure.
So that's fair to say that, you know, a bass player is the enforcer of tunes.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say so. And, I mean, I think I've kind of come around to kind of appreciate most of the styles that people bring to playing their instrument. You know, I mean, there was, because I do find myself caring so much about the equipment and the tone and the presence that the particular thing that I'm playing brings. There's also a part of me that's just like, yeah, fuck it. I totally respect it when people are just like totally punk rock about something and they're just like, I don't give a shit. This sounds terrible, but I'm going to play it as loud as I can.
There's a time and a place for all of it. I think it depends on what's the goal and what's happening. But I think a lot of the time, a bass player, at least like the experience I've had with them, it's like, for whatever reason, sometimes they get a backlash like, oh, wait, you're trying to be like part of the band? Like, what? And I'm like, well, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, have you ever heard of Black Sabbath? Like, it's a real thing. Like, what are we talking about? Especially in, like, you know, my forte of, like, death metal. Like, it almost gets erased unless you're in fucking Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, dude, the Lacusa full length, like, when we came out of the studio with that thing mixed, like, I was, like, nice and heavy in the mix, and the album was so, oh, it was so loud. And, like, the bass, like, it didn't overpower everything, but I mean, like, when you have two like razor thin guitar tones like going over top of each other, I mean, somebody's got to be somebody has to fill the rest of that sound out, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so I sounded great. They send it away to master, and it comes back, and I'm like completely mastered out of the record. It's still hard for me to listen to.
Got fucking Jason Newsted.
Yeah, dude, they Jason Newsted it for sure.
Oh well. Funny story about that record is I did vocals on two of those songs, and I was just fucking left out completely, not credited at all.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Betrayed by the Sea, and then the song, I think, Lacusta.
Oh, fuck. I remember you were on Betrayed by the Sea.
Yeah.
I forgot you were on Lacusta, though.
I got a fucking ride from Cleveland, where I was living at the time, to Columbus to record. My part in Lacusta might have got cut out, because I didn't do very well. But, it was weird. I was like, I don't even know why you guys fucking want me on this goddamn thing. And then I was, I get down there like, yeah, you're weird. I don't think we want you on this thing. I'm like, well, what the fuck? I told you that. But Betrayed by the Sea came out all right, and I was super stoked. And then, like, I got the record, and I was like, oh, okay, guys.
Dude, that's a bummer. That's honestly, I kind of feel the same way a little bit about, you know, like I've kind of played here and there with a band called Before the High Wall over the years, and they went and had,
Travis? Sorry to interrupt you.
What'd you say?
Before the High Wall, what's the singer's name?
Oh, they're actually instrumental.
Holy fuck. I've had a few Labatts here today, Scott. What's the one fucking guy? He's got like olive skin. Not to be racist. It's Travis, isn't it?
Oh, the guitar player?
Yeah.
Oh, Garrett. Yeah.
Garrett, Travis, same fucking thing. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but yeah, Before the Iowa, I like those guys. But you were playing with them, you said?
Yeah, well, I played with them for a couple years, and like I was doing, I was their bass player for like in town shows and stuff like that. And then they get this article in Columbus Alive, maybe a few years ago, and they like didn't even tell me about it. They just like the two of them just went and did this interview and had photos taken and everything, and I didn't even know about it until the article came out. It was like.
Yeah.
I've done like multiple tours with these guys and played every Columbus show with them for years now, and I didn't even know until I picked up the paper.
And that's why fucking band shit gets weird, because it's like trying to get five people into one goddamn thing and like too many fucking agendas going on. I remember there was one interview after a Breath show, and like I showed up and they're like, well, somebody wants to film and interview us afterwards. I'm like, well, I can't. They're like, well, we're just going to do it without you. And I'm like, well, I don't mean to fucking toot my own horn, but everybody wants to hear me talk, man. So don't,
right.
You know, like they did it and then it never came out. Like nothing ever happened of it because they were probably fucking super weird and creeped the fucking interviewer out. And who knows what happened to it? Because I think it ended up being James and Ronnie doing it. And I'm sure Ronnie was great, but James is fucking a creeper, man.
Oh, dude, do you know what? At a cooler practice the other day, Jeff comes in and he goes, I think I just met somebody that used to be an artillery breath. And Ronnie was like, wait, what are you talking about? Who is this? I guess Jeff used Uber Eats and his Uber Eats driver was GURPS.
Ronnie sent me something about this. We're like, where Gerbs wouldn't stop talking to him and like kept his door open, and it's like January in Ohio, and he's just like, yeah man, I fucking played in bass and fucking artillery, man.
And it blew my mind because Ronnie and I just looked at each other and I was like, dude, I haven't heard from Gerbs in probably like 3 or 4 years. And Ronnie was like, yeah, me too, basically.
I'm fairly certain the last time I talked to him was when I personally had to kick him out of the band. And like, he didn't give a fuck. It was Gerbs. He's just like, ah, okay, man, cool. Like, didn't give a flying fuck. He's just like, I thought you guys were going to kick me out years ago, man. Well, speaking of Alive and Akula, you guys were just a part of the bands to watch out for this year from Columbus, right?
Yeah, it was really rad. We got to play this like big showcase thing at Scully's, which is kind of a bigger venue in Columbus. And we got like we got a cool little swimsuit edition front page picture in the Columbus Alive paper. So
is it still a paper or is it digital now?
It's both. They still do the paper.
Oh, good. That's like it's like a Free Times, right? Like Cleveland Free Times thing, like a free paper for the city.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. That's what I thought. That's really big, man. That's huge. That gets out to, I mean, everybody in the city probably grabs a copy of that motherfucker.
Yeah, we were really, really pleased with being included in that. I mean, it's nice, you know, just like having that kind of a recognition and everything. But I think the thing that was like really big for me was that I looked back at all of the past bands that had been picked as bands to watch. And that was like, those are like the bands that like got me into local music.
Yeah, you know, like, dude, that's cool.
I think like Teeth of the Hydra was a...
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, buddy. I lost you at Teeth of the Hydra. But you were saying like... You know, you being a younger cat and looking at the Columbus Live and seeing bands like that, it's kind of like a, what's the fucking word I'm looking for? Like a, You're smart. What's the word I'm looking for?
Dude, I'm not smart. I have no idea.
God damn it, dude. Why don't you drink beer? What the fuck?
That's probably what it is. I probably need to drink beer, and then I know exactly the word you're looking for.
When you get something after doing something for so long that's kind of like, you know, fuck my ass, dude.
But you were saying it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean that's fucking huge, man. And it was nice that they put like you said, they put Teeth of the Hydra in when you were younger, and to have, you know, a heavy band represented in there this year with you guys, Akula. Because I looked at the rest of them, I'm like, well, yeah, the rest of that looks like Columbus for sure. So it was awesome to see you guys in there, and I know you very well, and I know Ronnie really, really well. And then the other guys are from Lopan.
Yeah, so Jeff and Chris are they're the singer and the guitar player in Lopan. Jeff's been in Lopan for, oh God, I don't know, 8-9 years, probably something like that.
Right.
Chris actually joined Lopan maybe about a year ago, something like that, as their guitar player.
Right.
And then we've got another guitar player named Sergey that I've kind of played with on and off, really for like the last several years in a couple different projects. So it's
huge for you guys to kind of get that recognition, to, you know, after plugging away and playing in, you know, so many bands and so many hours and touring for nothing, to get at least a little bit of recognition is quite incredible.
Yeah, it felt really good because we kind of took a different approach with Akula than we have in like the different bands that we're in. And not to say that, you know, one thing is better than the other, but we kind of took the approach in Akula that we weren't going to do anything. Like, we weren't going to play shows until we were ready, or we weren't going to record until we were ready and we felt ready. You know, there wasn't going to be any more of this, like, oh, we got to hurry up and write, you know, 2 or 3 more songs so that we can start playing shows. It was like, shows will come whenever the material is finished and done. And I think, like, we really took the pressure off of ourselves by doing that. And then we also, like, we all listened to totally different types of metal for the most part. I mean, we have some crossover between several of us, but we all kind of listen to different types of heavy music.
Yeah.
So the other big thing was keeping an open mind whenever anybody brought an idea or anybody brought a specific riff. You know, we were very open to trying different avenues and different influences and stuff. And I think that comes across on our last record.
No, where, I was just about to say it totally comes across in the new record there.
Sweet. But then we also kind of said, you know, at this point we're grown-ups, and if there's something in the record that we don't like, or there's something in a particular song that we don't like, we're going to take the opportunity in Akula to say so, you know, and
that's
say
beautiful.
Like, hey, I really don't think this part fits there. You know, I really think that we can do this better, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, maybe more of a, like a, not, I don't, professional's not the word, because all the bands we've played in have been professional bands that have taken it seriously.
I wasn't quite sure if all the Biscuit Babies got your sarcasm there or not, so I figured I'd laugh just so they knew that was an appropriate time to laugh.
Artillery Breath remains as professional as it possibly can be, but it's really just 5 dudes getting wasted and playing fucking just fun heavy metal. But
right.
It's kind of like, you know, at some point, if you're going to keep doing it, you gotta, you know, it is a job at the end of the day. So, but that's good that it doesn't sound like it. You know, it doesn't sound like there was a specific approach to be like, okay, let's really buckle down. It sounds like you guys got together and wrote some kick-ass songs, and it came out beautifully.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And we brought some other elements into it too. Like, you know, a lot of us had kind of gotten into, I don't want to say that we got into a rut with our other projects, but you know, you're in a particular project or in a particular band for so long, and there comes, you know, long stretches of time where, like, you just show up to practice and you just run through the same fucking songs that you usually run through, and then you pack it up and you go home.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know about you, but I remember, like, at least in the early days of Locusa, and I'm sure this is true in the early days of The Breath, but, like, half of the reason why we went to practice was just to hang out.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And so, for sure. Akula wanted to get back to, like, I don't know, calling it like the social aspect of a band is kind of dumb, but like the hanging out, you know, like the bro time of being in a band.
Dude, Scott, that's a good point, because at the last like year or so of our third breath, it's like, hey, did you get on Slack? Did you read your email? Did you do your homework? Did you like, and it's just like, oh, dude, I fucking do not give a fuck about this at all. Like,
right.
It almost pushes you away from it. Like, because it is that bro time that I think something can come out of that more than trying to make shit. Like, oh, we've been a band for 10 years. We better start taking it serious instead of letting it just run. And with the way music is now, too, like, unless you're fucking Taylor Swift or Black China, you know, making fucking pornos, you're not going to make money anyhow.
Right, right.
But you guys just put a new record out. When did it drop? In January?
Yeah, I think we put it out January 2nd electronically. And then we kind of tentatively have plans to release it in physical format. I can't really say a whole lot about it just yet, but I think that we might have found an avenue for a physical release later this year.
That's Southern Lord. I'm guessing Southern Lord.
No, fuck. Yeah, right. No, they probably give us all kinds of crazy, like, touring requirements and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's an issue with that kind of shit, isn't it? You gotta release so many t-shirts and then stay on the road forever.
Right, right. You gotta stay on the road for a particular amount of time, and then, I mean, stuff like that just becomes impossible the older that you get with everybody having families and whatnot. So.
Absolutely. Now, you guys recorded relatively quick after becoming a band, but like you said, it you guys waited to make sure it was right, and then you guys, where did you end up recording at?
So we recorded this place in Grove City, Ohio, called Sonic Lounge. It's actually, I've recorded there a bunch of times before the Eyewall did some material there. The last Bridesmaid record came out of Sonic Lounge. If you're a musician in Ohio, anybody listening to this is a musician in Ohio, Sonic Lounge honestly has been like the best experience I've had in a studio in quite some time. So we've had a ton of fun there. It's also like you've probably felt some of this at some point, like you feel kind of silly sometimes just like being like a heavy metal musician, or, you know, like I don't want to say like I was ever like punk or anything like that, but there was a definite like punk aesthetic to the way that I looked at music for a while. And then like you go into this like professional studio and you kind of have this feeling of like, I'm not supposed to be here. Like, I'm supposed to make records in somebody's fucking basement that no one's supposed to listen to and no one's supposed to give a shit about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you like the recording process?
They treated us like they would like any musician coming in. So it was really refreshing.
Well, that's great. I mean, cause that could be an issue too. Like, especially on the heavier side of music, it almost seems like, some people could write you off as not music just because it's loud and on the heavier side of things.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Do you like the recording process?
You know, it's interesting. Pretty much up until Akula, I really have never liked recording. Recording really always felt tedious. I never felt like things came out in studio the way that they come out live for whatever reason. I don't know if I just, you know, for so long didn't know how to properly prepare for studio work or whatnot. But with the Akula record, everything kind of seemed to come together, and I think it was kind of like you know, Chris and Jeff have been a part of professional recordings. You know, Robbie's been a part of professional recordings.
Yeah, so have I, Scott.
What'd you say?
I said, so have I, Scott.
Well, I meant like within Akula.
Yeah.
But I've kind of been a part of a few of them. So it was nice to have the other people in the room and kind of watch the way that they handle things and how they handle, you know, adversity, because you can come into stuff in the studio that can be really rough. You know, we encountered it a couple times with the Akula record where, like, we didn't record stuff to a click. You know, Ronnie doesn't like to record to a click. But then there are passages where there are no drums. So how do we fill in that time? Like, how do we keep on track? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, having a proper studio, having a proper engineer, that was really awesome. And I think it really comes through on the record. I think you can really tell.
For sure. I really think people are going to really enjoy it if you haven't heard of Akula. It's self-titled, right?
Yeah, it's just self-titled.
And it really, you can get it on Bandcamp right now and iTunes.
Oh, it's on Bandcamp, iTunes, Spotify. Yeah, you can just listen to the record on Spotify for free. Yeah,
and we're like, if you're listening to us talk about it right now, and we're saying like heavy metal, it's clean vocals. The guy can sing his fucking dick off, and it really, it's a heavy, slower pace, but constant pounding, and it's a great record. Long songs. I really think you guys are doing the Lord's work up there.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. It's definitely not heavy metal in like the general sense. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Maiden lately. It's not really that kind of thing.
Good for you.
But I think that there are times we mix in elements of there's some Mastodon sounding stuff. I think we have a lot of Russian Circles influence. I think there are passages that sound a lot like newer bands like Sumac and stuff like that. So it's all different kinds of metal stuff.
Right. It's a heavy metal band, but it's not what the idiot listening to this right now is thinking of as a heavy metal band.
Right, right.
Well, that was, you talk about being in a studio. That was an issue, I think, too, when, we go do our first record with Kurt Blue from Converge at God City Studios, and then we try to go cut records in basements in Columbus, and it's like, ah, fuck, like, this isn't right. Like, it should, you almost walk in with a different, because what we were used to was, Kurt Blue, and that's not what you get at other places. So it ended up being a little weird after that, you know what I mean?
Right, right. And I've heard so many stories about that recording experience from Ronnie. like dude was mad that people farted in his studio and
oh yeah, dude. We slept in the parking lot the first night, and then like we made Ronnie beg him to let us sleep in the basement of the studio the second night. But he like and like I've seen him after that and since, and he hated us for sure. He hated us.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, he was happy to do it. I mean, and he got paid, but it was like, he didn't have to accept us in there. And he made the, I mean, that record is, I'm very proud of it. And to this day is like, it sounds, he's just a freak.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Yeah.
But he's just, he is a weird dude. Like, you never know if he's, like, sarcastic. Like, his voice stays the same constantly. It's, there's, like, his sarcasm or his pissed voice, like, doesn't change. So you just, and, like, we're 21 in Kurt Blue's studio, like, shit in our pants. Like, I'm, like, afraid, right. I'm, like, hiding beers like a fucking alcoholic, like, in the corner so he wouldn't see me, like, super scared and shit. It's weird.
I mean, I can just imagine being like super nervous in that studio and being like, I'm here in this professional studio and I'm playing, and the dude from Converge, the dude that wrote some of my favorite records growing up, is sitting there thinking, I fucking suck at my instruments.
I was so lucky that like when I did vocals, I was like, hey, let me do Trailer Thrash first just so I can like get some kind of confidence and open the voice up. And then the next song I did I said penis in it like four times. And he stopped me and he goes, hey, did you just say penis? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, cool. And then like he's like, start over again. And like, so my experience was super easy because he thought I was fucking hilarious because I had like my lyrics that say penis. Like, and he's like, not dick or cock, like specifically penis made him so happy. Scott, have you been to a Jackets game this year?
Yeah, I've been to a few this year. Not quite as many as last year. It's just kind of been life is just – I mean, like I hate it when people say life gets in the way and shit like that. But I came from a really super stressful work position where I was doing like, I don't know, 55, 60 plus hours a week. And it was just like, it was soul sucking, man. So I wasn't getting out a ton. And thankfully I found a new job maybe about a month and a half ago.
Fuck yeah, man.
And I've gone to a few of them this year.
Fuck yeah. I am trying to make my way to any kind of hockey game right now. We had the new baby in September, so three kids, trying to find a fucking babysitter. Like, it's so fucking hard. Like, and the wife's a Red Wings fan, so I'm like, she wants to go to the game on the 9th in Columbus, Red Wings versus the Blue Jacks. So I'm like, well, we don't have a babysitter, because I'm not close. Right. I'm not close with my family except for my brothers, and both of my brothers live out of state, and then all of her family's from Michigan because she's not from here. So it's like, fuck, what do we do? And so, and then with Little Caesars being arena this year, I'm like, well, I'd rather just, you know, go see a random team versus the Red Wings at the new arena, and, you know, we'll have the rest of fucking eternity to go down to Nationwide.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you guys ever make it down here, we got to go. Donna and Ronnie always...
I call them Donnie, too.
Do you?
Yeah, for sure I do.
They always try to get us to go to, like, Jackets and Wings games, and it just never works out, like, season after season for whatever reason. So if at any point you guys do, like, we are 100% in.
Dude, fucking next time you come on, you need to fucking get... whatever weird fucking indie coffee shop you and Ronnie are into, guys meet up and both of you can be on the biscuit, dude. Because he's been to, like, he goes to hockey games. I know he really doesn't give a fuck about it, but he can speak to, like, you know, being to a professional basketball game or a hockey game.
Oh, yeah.
And I think people would find interest in that.
Oh, absolutely. And he's
fucking great on the mic, especially for a fucking drummer. And to have a drummer and a bassist on a podcast, like, that's fucking history there. Because no one gives a fuck what you guys have to say.
Well, there's also some other places that I'm sure you guys can go to games.
Worcester?
I've been meaning to go up to Toledo and catch a Walleyes game.
Oh, dude, my buddy just moved to Toledo this year. And he was at the game where they had the brawl 2 weeks ago.
I was going to ask if you saw that brawl, because that shit was out of control.
Yeah, homeboy, his name's Black Gabe. Seriously, that's his name. he's from Belleville. He's like one of the six black dudes here. That's just how it happens. It's not, you know, don't fucking me too me. But he sent me a fucking video. He goes, dude, look at this fucking. He's like just screaming, fuck him up. And like, but it makes me happy because part of like the biscuit coming to this region and people knowing me, like it has gotten people into it. And like, you know, he moved to Toledo. Now he's going to a bunch of Walleye games. It makes me so happy, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was also thinking about, when we were talking about like the role of an enforcer, I was thinking about that fight specifically because I don't know the players at that level, to be honest.
Right.
But I remember watching that brawl and seeing somebody get cross-checked in the head and thinking, that's why there's fucking fighting in hockey.
Exactly.
So that people don't get cross-checked in the head.
Exactly. It's it's necessary. It really is, because the game, you carry a weapon and you go 30 miles an hour.
Right.
There's dudes that are really, really good at it, and then there's dudes that are really good at it but can fuck people up.
Right.
So they need to make sure that the little guy, not even necessarily little guy, but the guy that, like, is just a freak, an animal, like, you know, once-in-a-lifetime player, doesn't get touched. But if you ever just hold something in your hand and you get mad, you're going to want to hit somebody with it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's I just hate to see that it's getting run out the way it is, but – I was saying this next year, I'm just going to just keep going to ECHL games. Like you said, go to Toledo Walleye games or fucking start going to the Cleveland Monster games.
I'll meet you for a Monsters game. I'll pick you up and go to the Monsters game sometime if you want.
Bro, let's do it.
Let's totally do it.
Brett Gallant from the Ice Guardians is playing out there right now.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. Yes,
That's awesome.
Yes, he fucking is. And I was looking into this. The College of Worcester has a new hockey team, and that's like a half hour from where I'm at. But it's
oh, hockey. Seriously?
Oh yeah, and it's hockey, and it's for like $10 or whatever. You know what I mean? So like, I'm gonna start checking that shit out too. Probably get some fucking press credentials. Start fucking asking the boys some real questions from the biscuit. They'll probably shit their pants the first time I go up and be like, hey, dude, you into pussy or what?
Dude, I want to be there when that happens. I want to go to that game.
I need to see a hockey game with you, buddy. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
And Bowling Green. I want to go to a Bowling Green game.
Oh, yeah, totally. We can actually make all of this happen.
For sure.
I even want to go to like a Firebirds game, like a Flint Firebirds game at some point.
Have you been? I've been to Warriors games and before the Firebirds, but that it's a fucking beautiful place to see hockey. The arena's like the perfect size for that type of hockey, man. It's perfect.
Awesome.
But you know Bieksa from Anaheim Ducks, who's super.
Oh yeah, the super flying punch. How could I forget?
Dude, he played at Bowling Green.
Did he really?
Fuck yeah, he did. He said he had scholarships all over the fucking place, but like. They were like, hey, you can come play as a freshman, and he just ended up fucking going there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
fucking... I wonder what kind of a player he was back then. Because, I mean, he's a tough guy now, but I wonder what kind of a player he was back then.
You'd have to imagine he was just huge, but in college you can't be like the dude he is now. So, I mean, he probably roughhoused as much as he could, but he was probably dropping like 25 goals a year and shit like that.
Yeah, probably.
And them dudes, like, this is a reoccurring subject on, like, hey, you do know that Scott Parker scored like 35 goals in the AHL. Like, these guys are good at hockey. They choose to fight people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they at a point, you know, like, hey, I'm not Patrick Kane or I'm not fucking Evgeny Malkin, but I can make sure that Evgeny Malkin can be Evgeny Malkin.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you cannot downplay the role that the Sheriff played in the Avalanche winning the Cup. I mean, he's the reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, he's part of the reason why people didn't get in Sakic and Forsberg's face.
No, why? I mean, Sakic still fucking loves him to this day for it. Like,
right.
Sakic's brain still works as a GM fluently because
of the Sheriff.
Because of the Sheriff. Period. You know, I wanted to ask you, did you end up watching any of the Olympics, ice hockey specifically?
You know, I watched some of it. I wasn't able to watch a ton. I mean, I watched the women's team fucking win gold on that beautiful shootout goal. Shit was unreal.
Can you repeat that for all the Canadian listeners I have?
about the American women's hockey team winning gold? Yeah, I can repeat that.
Yeah fuck you, Canada. Oh god, it was so good. It's so righteous. And how filthy was that shootout goal?
It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. I remember watching it, and I think I can't remember if I was at my in-laws or not. Wherever I was, I screamed when I saw it. I was like, "No shit,
dude!" My fucking dipshit brothers are into this thing where, like, because I'll DVR the games because it's in South Korea, so they're playing them at like 2 a.m.
Right.
And I'll say, guys, because I have like a group text with them. I love my brothers. Love you, Randy. Love you, Brendan. But I'll be like, hey, don't tell me anything. Because our whole relationship is based off of sports. If we didn't have sports, we wouldn't speak to each other. But like, guys, don't fucking. And so then they got like this hard on like fetish of telling me the scores of all the fucking hockey games from the Olympics this year. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm gonna fucking scream. But the gold game, it didn't happen. The gold game, the women's gold game, I made it. I didn't get on Twitter or anything all day long. I recorded it, and my fucking DirecTV stopped at the end of overtime and didn't get the shoot up.
Oh, no.
Dude, I was – so fuck you, DirecTV. And, you know, it's – and it, what's even better for me is I have two daughters, and – my middle daughter specifically is really into hockey, and these girls, you know, talked about watching the 1998 girls win the gold. So I'm really excited for little girls across the United States to see these girls, these role models, go there with a goal in mind. I mean, if you heard any interviews from any of these women before the tournament started, it's it's gold or bust. We're not going to the Olympics to, you know, have sportsmanship and enjoy South Korea's first women's hockey team. No, it wasn't fucking about that. There was a mission to beat fucking Canada specifically in the gold medal game, and they did it.
Yeah.
And like,
I could see Pee Wee girls hockey exploding over the next couple of years.
I hope so. With
that win and with the NWHL, I could see it just exploding over the next couple of years.
I really, really hope so. And hats off to who was it? Jocelyn Lamoureux, who, I mean, there's guys in the NHL that don't even have the guts to try that shit. And she did it in the fucking Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
And then shame on whoever set up the United States men's team. Send college guys. If we're going to send amateurs, send amateurs. Because whatever that...
Wasn't the Wiz out there? Wasn't James Wisniewski out there?
Dude, he did pretty damn good, dude.
Did he? Okay.
He did.
See, I mean, like, it's tough. I remember having the Wiz, like, in Columbus. And,
I love the Wiz. I loved him.
I loved him every time that we were on the power play, and I fucking hated him every time we were in the defensive zone. Because he was such a defensive liability, man.
I couldn't understand why he didn't his power play at the Olympics wasn't like it was in Columbus. When he was on the Columbus power play, dude, he was fucking saucing all over the motherfucker. Like, he was a power play god.
It was just like every Columbus power play for a season or two was just get the puck to Wisniewski because he's just going to crank it.
I think that was like part of the reason he went to that team was to do that, but it didn't transfer over, and something fucking happened. And a lot of people were saying, you know, him or Gionta is going to get an NHL contract out of that. And so, you know, it wasn't Wiz, but I'm hearing Gionta is going to sign up with somebody here for a playoff run.
I'm surprised that Wiz isn't going to get anything for a playoff run. I mean, with somebody of his caliber, I mean, sure, he's an older player, but somebody of his caliber who's in, you know, Olympic shape at this point in time to not get a contract, at least for like a playoff stretch run, like, I'm pretty surprised.
God,
especially because Columbus is out here signing like, what Gerby, the fuck is his name?
Gerby.
The Gerber baby, yeah.
He's 5'4", Scott. He's 5'4". He's the smallest player since some fucking guy in 1954 or some crazy shit like that. And the one thing Columbus needs is a power play? Don't fucking sign James Wisniewski. No.
Right.
Let's keep Jack Johnson and keep that fucking train going. Like, I still think the team makes the playoffs. I do.
The whole Jack thing bumps me out so hard because, I mean, say, like, I know that he has, like, a shitload of off-ice troubles and whatnot, and I know that, like, he hasn't always played great in Columbus, but I was a fan when Columbus, like, when the Columbus franchise just broke the fuck down, right?
Yeah.
So around the whole Jeff Carter thing, like, that shit just collapsed.
Yeah.
You know, that shit just completely capsized. We were the worst team in the league by far, and nobody gave a shit.
No.
Jack Johnson... What'd you say?
I said, no, nobody cared. Not the people there, or the fans didn't care.
Right. It wasn't until we had Jack Johnson, Mark Letestu, and Derek McKenzie that anybody showed like they gave a shit about playing for Columbus. And I think you can kind of lump Matt Calvert in there too, but I think he came a little bit later. But I will always love Jack Johnson for being that player, for caring about playing in Columbus.
Fucking A, man. That's a great point, Scott, man. And I love him. I think it's his time has come up here in Columbus. But if not, I wish him the best wherever he goes, especially with all his off-ice issues that he's had to deal with. Dude can play fucking hockey. That's for goddamn sure.
And he was definitely a part of my favorite promotion that Columbus ever did as an organization.
What?
So when the Carter trade happened and we sent Carter to LA for Johnson and a first rounder, Jack Johnson took number 7. And I think Carter was 7 at the time. And so because a bunch of people had gone out and bought Jeff Carter jerseys, you know, Jeff Carter Columbus jerseys, and now he wasn't even with the team for a full season, really. Columbus had a promotion where they would t- tear the stitching out of the back of your jersey that said Carter, and they would replace it with Johnson for free. As soon as I heard that, it felt so good. I was so proud.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Now, when you're down there, do you find yourself going to any Buckeyes games or any high school hockey games in the area, or are you just strictly going to NHL games?
Man, I should really be going to Buckeye games because they've played really well over the last season or two.
They're phenomenal this year.
Yeah, I just haven't made it out. So it's strictly been Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, that was a part of when I was in high school. You know Chuck Steelman, don't you?
Oh, the name sounds super familiar.
I know you've met him. But his dad and another dude I went to school with, their parents would get season tickets to the Buckeyes. And so they would just rotate, like, which parent was driving the group of six dudes down to go watch fucking RJ Umberger and Steckel play.
Yeah.
And it was awesome, dude. And I fell in love with it. I fucking hate Ohio State, but I love Ohio State hockey, man. I really do.
That's awesome. That's another game we got to go to then.
We will go next year when Notre Dame plays Ohio State at the Shot. We're going.
Beautiful. It's done.
Sold. Sold. Scott, I want to ask you right now, because I know you're into all kinds of fucking crazy tunes. What are your favorite jams right now, buddy?
Oh, holy shit. Favorite jams right now. I'm listening to a ton of Sumac these days, which is like Aaron Turner from Isis and Brian Cook from Russian Circles. If you haven't listened to it, it's like it's super off-kilter metal that is like, it's like anxiety inducing for like 80% of it. And then for the final 20%, there are parts that are just like beautiful. It's just awesome.
When you said Aaron Turner, I thought you said Aaron Lewis. And I was like, are you listening to fucking, what was that band called?
Stain?
Yes, dude.
No, but dude, at Akula practice, we play Stain songs all the time.
You better. Why wouldn't you?
Fuck, what else am I listening to right now? The new Godspeed You Black Emperor record is really fucking good. Mm-hmm. I know those guys are coming to Columbus in, maybe a couple weeks or something like that. I'm super excited.
Are you going?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who's your favorite bass player of all time, Scott?
Oh, favorite bass player of all time? God damn it.
I know. I'm hitting you with the hard ones, man. That's what the biscuit's all about.
Oh, God. Shit, let me think about this for 1 second. You know, I'm going to go with somebody not metal at all. I'm going to say my favorite bass player of all time is probably John Entwistle.
From the fucking Rolling Stones?
No, Grateful from... Say what?
I know that fucking name. Who the fuck is it?
Oh, he was in The Who.
Oh, fuck that guy, dude. Fuck that guy. Pete Townsend's a child molester, dude.
Yeah, he is.
Second best. Who's your second favorite? Don't give me that fucking one. Give me your second favorite.
All right, second favorite, I'm going to go with Jaco Pastorius.
Huh?
he was Jaco? A bass player, and he was the bass player in Weather Report.
Jaco.
Yeah, Jaco.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You said the fucking last name so fast and fucking college-y, I couldn't fucking hear it, man.
Oh, college-y.
Yeah, when I was in my earlier days and I considered myself a bass player, I liked a lot of Jaco. He's something else.
Yeah. He just did a lot for
bass players. I don't want
to say bass playing in general, but just like...
I would say it, dude, for bass playing, for sure.
Yeah. I guess just like the way that people viewed bass as an element of like modern music.
I like that. Scott, I got one more question for you, dude. I'm going to get on my way. We got to go watch some Blue Jackets hockey. We're already about an hour in. What's the favorite track that you've ever been a part of?
Oh, man. That's a really good question.
Dude, I was thinking about it for myself, and I'm like, what am I most – when I look back – like recording wise, what am I most proud of? Like, cause I can think of like instances of shows where I thought that I had done, because I don't play an instrument. I mean, I play instruments, but in the band I was more of a performer even before a vocalist, really. So I mean, I have points where I think about like, oh, I did this well, or like I got the crowd back on this part. But like recording, I've never really sat down and been like, what's my favorite fucking track?
No, dude, it's got to be Trailer Thrash.
It's got to be?
Say what?
It said Trailer Thrash has to be my best one?
Oh, it's got to be Trailer Thrash. Like, that's a monument to modern metal.
People love that song, dude. They really do.
It's my favorite Breath song by far.
I don't think anybody hates that song more than the five people that recorded that song.
I believe it, dude. You guys haven't played that song in like the last several years that I've seen you.
No, I was always into playing it. I was like, well, just fucking play. And like Eric was like, I'm not fucking playing that fucking song anymore. I'm like, all right, fine.
Oh man, there's a few that I'm super proud of. I'm really proud of my part on a old Locusta track, actually. It's a song called Masters Ethereal, which was one of my favorite songs that Locusta ever played. That's probably way up there. The Last Bridesmaid record has a few that I'm super proud of. But I would definitely say I think number one is probably going to be Force Me Open by Akula. I think that's the one that I'm most proud of at this point.
Hell yeah, man. Scott, thank you so much for coming on, man. I'm really excited about the new Akula and everything you guys are doing down there. And I'm excited to go see some fucking hockey games with you, buddy.
For sure, Cody. I love you, man. Let's go do it.
I love you too, man. You have a good night.
Thanks, dude. You too.
Yep, bye-bye. How many bucks do I give? Yeah.